A bipartisan agreement is reached on an infrastructure plan. Plus, the impact of COVID-19 outbreaks in Asia on the global supply chain.
It doesn't just hit electronic products. It doesn't just hit autos. It hits almost anything that's made in China.
And could cryptocurrency be part of your 401k? It's Friday, June 11th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The G7 summit officially begins today in Cornwall, England. The world's seven largest advanced economies will tackle a wide range of issues, from climate change to the post-pandemic economic recovery. President Biden announced yesterday that the U.S. would donate 500 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine to lower-income countries.
Our vaccine donations don't include pressure for favors or potential concessions. We're doing this to save lives, to end this pandemic. That's it, period.
Also agreed Thursday, the Atlantic Charter between the U.S. and the U.K. It lays out broad principles on health policy, climate change, and democratic values. You can follow all the developments from the G7 on our website or the Journal app. In Washington, a group of bipartisan senators have reached an agreement for an infrastructure proposal without the need for tax increases. The group of 10 senators didn't reveal details of the plan, but people familiar with the proposal say it would spend $974 billion over 5 years and $1.2 trillion if it continued over 8 years. To move forward, those plans will need buy-in from a broader group of lawmakers and the White House. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has announced a redesign of the company's high-end sedan dubbed the Model S Plaid. It starts around $130,000. It's also coming later than expected. Originally planned for February, the delay means Tesla has so far largely missed out on this year's booming demand for luxury vehicles, which typically are more lucrative for automakers. The Model S Plaid has an estimated range of 390 miles and can accelerate from 0 to 60 miles an hour in less than 2 seconds. And from cars to planes, American Airlines is investing in electric flying taxis. It plans to invest $25 million in Vertical Aerospace Group, a UK-based electric aircraft startup. American said the aircraft, which take off and land vertically like helicopters, could zip customers around congested cities to get to and from airports. The Chinese ride-hailing behemoth named Didi made its IPO papers public on Thursday. This sets the company up to raise billions and begin publicly trading in the U.S. in July. People familiar with the matter said it could fetch a valuation upward of $70 billion. Money is pouring into stocks that get good grades on issues like building a diverse workforce and reducing carbon emissions. But do these stocks deliver strong returns for investors? Let's talk about this further with markets reporter Anna Hertenstein in London. Anna, good morning.
Morning, Mark.
So Anna, we're talking about this concept known as ESG, which stands for environmental, social, and governance. And basically, it's a way to measure how companies act as corporate citizens. Do companies with a strong showing traditionally do well in the markets?
So that's a good question, because the answer is it really depends. This is an area of finance that has until recently been completely unregulated. There hasn't really been a real definition of what sustainable is and what's not. And some people saw this gap as an opportunity in the market to come in and make up their own definition. And so fast forward a few years and there are tons of companies that are doing this, but they all do it in different ways. So as an investor, this is really confusing, because you can go to company A and they'll tell you one thing, but company B will often tell you something completely different. And in terms of how this affects their stock performance, it also completely depends. The Wall Street Journal analyzed nearly 500 companies which had different ratings by different providers, and the results were all over the place.
So Anna, with all of this being so vague, could we see regulators get involved?
This is already happening. In the EU, In March, they put into effect the first regulation on sustainable investing, which essentially forces fund managers to back up their claims if they say they're investing sustainably. And this has also attracted the SEC's attention recently. It said that it's weighing regulations around disclosure on things like carbon emissions, exposure to climate change. So this wild west of sustainable investing, where you could just make up your own definitions, is likely on its way out.
Anna Hertenstein in London. Thanks, Anna.
Thanks so much.
Just ahead, parts of Asia contend with COVID-19 outbreaks. We'll look at the impact on global supply chains after the break.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
The number of COVID cases in the United States has declined, and vaccinations are lessening the worst effects of the pandemic. Yet as America experiences a rebirth of sorts, in some parts of Asia, that's not the case, and new cases of COVID-19 threaten the global economic recovery. In southern China, this has caused one of the world's busiest ports to close, leading to backlogged cargo shipments around the world. In Taiwan and Malaysia, factories in the semiconductor supply chain have had to shut their facilities amid a surge in cases there. These problems are creating new bottlenecks in the global supply chain, impacting all of us. Let's look into this further. I'm joined now by our China Bureau Chief, Jonathan Cheng. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan, early on, we saw quick progress from many Asian nations in combating the coronavirus. In some places, we saw a zero tolerance policy, tighter border control. What went wrong? What's behind these current outbreaks?
Well, in some ways, some of these Asian economies have been arguably a victim of their own success in that they managed to tamp down COVID pretty early on, as you noted, in part by keeping their borders relatively tight. And so what that meant was when vaccines started to become available, many of these countries struggled to get their populations to take the vaccine. So vaccination rates are much lower in many of these places than they are in the West. And what that means is that you're still vulnerable if and when these infections somehow get through your border controls. And so it's really come back to bite some of these economies.
So there are some notable problems. Again, the port closure in China, the outbreaks in Taiwan and Malaysia at the factories. How is this impacting the supply chains?
Well, they're related. The ones in, you know, the ones in Taiwan and Malaysia are primarily hitting the semiconductor industry. We know that the chip business has already been under quite a lot of strain in the past year, largely because the whole world has become so reliant on Taiwan in particular to manufacture some of the world's most advanced chips. And so it was an industry that was already vulnerable. And so it certainly doesn't need a wave of COVID cases hitting workers in some of these factories and causing some of them to shut down for several days, if not longer. It's also hitting the shipping industry because made in China is obviously still a very big deal. And Shenzhen in the south of China is one of the largest ports in all of China. They've had a handful of cases among the dock workers there, and that's forced, you know, shipments basically to come to a virtual standstill. It means that shipping a crate of stuff from southern China to, for example, the port of Los Angeles has now gone up several times. Things are going to take longer to get there, and they're going to cost more when they do get there.
Let's take things even a step further and focus on some of the products in addition to the chip issue. What products could be hard to get in the U.S.? And as you mentioned, costs could go up as a result.
Yeah, so the chip shortage in particular hits consumer electronics. We all know phones, computers, other gadgets, as well as autos. We know that getting a car these days has been one of the toughest things to buy in the U.S. Doesn't matter whether you're ready to go to a lot with cash in hand. It's just there aren't enough cars around. And then, of course, the shipping hit on this big port in southern China doesn't just hit electronic products. It doesn't just hit autos. It hits almost anything that's made in China. That means toys. That means furniture, that means, I mean, basically anything that's made in China that needs to come to America or to any other country, you know, in a big shipping container, that's going to cost a lot more, at least for the shipping component of it, and it's going to take a lot longer.
And finally, Jonathan, let's talk big picture about inflation. Just this week, we've seen data from around the world, including the US, but also in China, showing prices rising at the fastest level in years. How could this impact the conversations among decision makers?
You're right. I mean, even prior to these shortages and supply chain disruptions we've seen in Asia, inflation was already approaching the highest levels in a decade. And I do think that it's something that was already a concern, already near the top of policymakers' list of worries. And now to see this happen as well in Asia could make that conversation even more of a hot topic. As to what policymakers can do, I think it is quite difficult to sort of figure out because it is driven by a situation that is arguably a short-term one, but the jury is still out. We still don't know whether or not COVID cases are going to continue to persist in Asia. And if so, then it may mean that some of this inflation is quite durable. On the other hand, if authorities can get these cases under control quite quickly, then perhaps it won't matter as much to policymakers because they may see it as something that's relatively transient.
Jonathan Chang in China. Jonathan, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, would you want cryptocurrencies in your 401k? Using volatile assets for retirement planning may not be for everyone, but one 401k provider called For Us All is giving it a go. It struck a deal with cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase that will allow savers to invest in Bitcoin, Ether, Litecoin, and others. But there's a catch. The journal's Ann Turgeson explains.
Once the value of the cryptocurrency offerings within an investor's portfolio exceeds 5% of the balance, the company will notify the employee to ideally to sell some cryptocurrency and what they call rebalance by, you know, capping their exposure at 5%.
You can hear more on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal. Enjoy your Friday, and thanks for listening.